Hello, we're reading in the book Shamati, the white book Shamati in English. It's on page 123, article 38, the fear of God is his treasure. If you have questions, ask them at the website cab.tv. Questions based on the topic of the lesson will be asked during the lesson. The white book Shamati in English, page 123, article 38, the fear of God is his treasure. A treasure is a vessel in which the possession is placed. Grain, for example, is placed in the barn, and precious things are placed in a more heavily guarded place. Thus, every received thing is called by its correlation to the light, and the vessel must be able to receive the things. It is as we learn that there is no light without a vessel, and this applies even in corporeality. Yet, what is the vessel in spirituality in which we can receive the spiritual bounty that the Creator wants to give, which will match the light? That is, as in corporeality, where the vessel needs a correlation with the object that is placed in it. For example, we cannot say that we have treasures of wine, which we poured in new sacks to keep the wine from turning sour, or that we have taken a lot of flour in barrels. Instead, there is a conduct that the container of wine is barrels and jars, and the container for the flour is sacks and not barrels, etc. Thus, there is a question, what is the spiritual container, the vessels from which we can make a big treasure of the upper bounty? There is a rule that the cow wants to feed more than the calf wants to eat. This is because his wish is to do good to his creatures, and the reason for the tzimtzum, restriction, we must believe, is for our own good. And the reason must be that we do not have the right vessels where the bounty can be, like the corporeal vessels, which must be right for what is placed there. Hence, we must say that if we add the vessels, there will be something to hold the added bounty. The answer that comes to that is that in his treasury, the Creator has only the treasure of fear of God. Yet, we should interpret what fear is, that it is the vessel, the treasure is made of this vessel, and all the important things are placed in it. He said that fear is, as it is written about Moses, our sages said, the reward for, and Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look, he was rewarded with, the similitude of the Lord doth he behold. Fear refers to one's fear of the great pleasure that exists there, that one will not be able to receive it in order to bestow. The reward for that, for having had fear, is that thus he had made for himself a vessel in which to receive the upper bounty. This is man's work. And besides that, we attribute everything to the Creator. Yet, it is not so with fear, because the meaning of fear is to not receive. And what the Creator gives, he gives only to receive. And this is the meaning of everything is in the hands of God except the fear of God. This is the vessel that we need. Otherwise, we will be considered fools. As our sages said, who is a fool? He who loses what he is given. It means that the sitra achra, the other side, will take the abundance from us if we cannot aim in order to bestow, because then it goes to the vessels of reception. which is the Sitra Achra and impurity. This is the meaning of, and ye shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. Observing means fear. And although the nature of the light is that it keeps itself, meaning that the light leaves before one wants to receive the light into the vessels of reception, yet one must do it by himself as much as one can. As our sages said, you will observe yourselves a little from below, and I will observe you a lot from above. The reason we attribute fear to people, as our sages said, everything is in the hands of God but the fear of God, is because He can give everything except fear. This is because what the Creator gives is more love, not fear. Acquiring fear is through the power of Torah and mitzvot. It means that when one engages in Torah and mitzvot with the intention to be rewarded with bringing contentment to one's Maker, that aim that rests on the acts of mitzvot and the study of Torah brings one to attain it. Otherwise, one might stay. Although one keeps Torah and mitzvot in every item and detail, one will still remain merely in the degree of holy still. It follows that one should always remember the reason that obligates one to engage in Torah and mitzvot. This is what our sages meant by that your holiness will be for my name. It means that I will be your cause, meaning that your entire work is in wanting to delight me. Meaning that all your deeds will be in order to bestow. Our sages said, everything there is in keeping, there is in remembering. This means that all those who engage in keeping Torah and mitzvot with the aim to achieve remembering, by way of, when I remember him, he will not suffer me to sleep. It follows that the keeping is primarily in order to be rewarded remembering. Thus, one's desire to remember that the Creator is the cause for keeping Torah and mitzvot. This is so because it follows that the reason and the cause to keep the Torah and mitzvot is the Creator. As without it, one cannot cleave to the Creator, since He and I cannot dwell in the same abode due to the disparity of form. The reason that the reward and punishment is not revealed, that we must only believe in reward and punishment, is because the Creator wants everyone to work for Him and not for themselves. This is discerned as disparity of form from the Creator. If the reward and punishment were revealed, one would work because of self-love, meaning so that the Creator would love him, or because of self-hate, meaning for fear that the Creator would hate him. It follows that the reason for the work is only the person, not the Creator. And the Creator wants that he will be the compelling reason. It turns out that fear is precisely when one recognizes one's lowness and says that he's serving the king, meaning that one's wish to bestow upon him is considered a great privilege, and it is more valuable than he can say. It is according to the rule that with an important personality, what is given to him is considered receiving from him. To the extent that one feels one's lowness, to that extent one can begin to appreciate the greatness of the Creator, and the desire to serve Him will awaken. However, if one is proud, the Creator says, "He and I cannot dwell in the same abode." This is the meaning of a fool, an evil, and a rude go together. The reason is that since one has no fear, meaning one cannot lower oneself before the Creator and say that it is a great honor for him to be able to serve him without any reward, one cannot receive any wisdom from the Creator, and he remains a fool. Then, he who is a fool is wicked. As our sages said, one does not sin unless folly entered him.
We learn that we have 3 degrees, which are this world, which is where everyone is. Then there's a degree called the time of preparation, where we're now talking about the point in the heart, how we evolve by it, by preferring it, putting it higher than this world, putting it higher than our ego. And then we have another degree called repentance, from fear, where we, or correction from fear, when we come to the degree of Bina, Chafetz Chesed, delighted in mercy, righteous. This is already a correction. That lies over all the 613 desires. And after that, there's also a degree called correction from love. This is called complete righteous, and that is already receiving in order to bestow. The level before is bestowing in order to bestow. So the degree of fear is a very important degree, correction from fear, which is the opening towards resembling the Creator. Here, at the degree of Chafetz Chesed, a person only rejects his ego. He rises above it. His ego is being increased more and more, and he rises higher and higher. That's the ego, and that is the point in the heart, the importance of it. And at the degree of love, he increases his vessel of reception more and more and starts receiving in it in order to bestow. So the degree of fear is actually a vessel in which he later receives the revelation of the Creator. That's why it's called a treasure, in which all of the the treasure itself. It's like the vessel of the treasure and the fulfillment of the treasure that later is revealed. So the fear of the Creator is the vessel in which all the light of Ein Sof is later received. And when he says we don't need to ask for anything, it'll come by itself, according to the Reshimot, according to the times. But what we have to be constantly concerned about is the fear. The fear refers to the tzimtzum, restriction, not to receive, and always work on masach and ol chozer, that I'll be always above my desire. How can I do it? Of course I can't do it. It's all done by the light, but we have to ask for it. The request, the demand has to come from us always. And then that's it. And we have to be alert towards it all the time. If so, then in the society also, we have to make sure that this goal, this acknowledgement of keeping ourselves connected, where the most important is that vessel we generate in order to bestow, by making a connection above our ego, above each and everyone's ego. This is how we are helping each other rise to a different state. Each and everyone has his ego, and we connect our points in the heart so they are connected, those points. In them we'll have that vessel called fear. Being above our ego and making a connection there, that's what we have to worry about. If we unite, then this will be here our vessel for receiving the treasure, and all the rest will be below the masach, below the tzimtzum. So that's what we're talking about when we say arvut and mutual guarantee, mutual support, that this is how we connect in order to have relations of bestowal developed between us, which is on top of our egoistic desires. If a person is concerned about that, if he tries to be in fear from receiving, then he prepares his vessels and reaches a mutual connection with the others. And once that connection happens, the light appears there immediately, because the light is entirely at rest, and it becomes apparent according to the equivalence with it. That's all. Questions? Yes?
Tal from Washington DC is asking, why does the Creator want us to work for Him?
Yes, indeed, we are called slaves. Well, why? Why slaves? Sounds like the most contemptible thing. And we have to be afraid of, you know, not only He hits us, He also wants us to be devoted, you know, to work for Him devotedly. It's something horrible. And His relation to us to this day, I wouldn't say it's really polite and kind. Yes, true. We don't understand these things. This is what Baal Salam tells us. and also the Ari before that, Rav Chaim Vital, in the introduction to the study of the Ten Sefirot, and Rav Chaim Vital writes it in the introduction to the Gate of Introductions, that we don't understand the Creator. We are simply thinking in different concepts, so much so that what seems as justice and correct and truth to us and the way people should behave and be is all not it. And if it was just simply opposite, like black and white, we could be we could understand it, but we just don't understand it because it's just a completely different frequency. It's not an opposite mind, it's a different mind. That's why we don't understand the Creator's providence and guidance. And the words that Kabbalists use seem very kind of unlikable to us. It's not something we respect. And he's right, our friend from Washington, of course. For sure, yes. But this is how it sounds. There's a similar thing we can understand when a mother asks her child to be good. Do it for me, she says, for, you know, for grandfather, for your grandmother, for father. She also kind of evokes a relation in him. Why does the child need it? Why do I owe something to you? You were thinking about your own beastly pleasure. Why did you do, now that you gave birth to me, of course you owe everything to me because you gave birth to me. But why do you demand anything from me? Why do I need to give you anything? I don't owe you anything. And we kind of feel it inside, that there is a certain problem of the connection between, in the connection between parents and children and vice versa. But here in our world, we can somehow, well, we're still wrong in that too, but in spirituality, we don't know how to work out our relationship with the Creator. We don't know, we don't understand that just like in our world, when we want something for our children, we only want it for their benefit. Of course, you can say it's our ego eventually and so on, but we want it for their benefit. When we want the child to behave nicely, which perhaps is like a burden for the child, he doesn't want to put himself in limits. With the Creator, it's a simple matter. He is at complete rest, meaning he has no deficit, no pleasure, no self-appeal. Nothing that we can say that was done for himself. Although, all the Torah and all the explanations are saying to bring contentment to the Maker, and that He created everything to delight the creatures because that's His joy, and how do we do good to Him and so on. It always says about how do I fulfill Him, as if He's like a miserable guy that suffers. And there's also sorrow of divinity and so on. On the other hand, we say that this is something absolute, that there's nothing that he needs to receive. So everything is described in our language, and it's very hard for us to put it in words. In the meantime, this is understood. Sometimes when I talk to beginners, it turns out that I, as if, talk about things that are sound like nonsense or childish things or, well, you know, unrealistic. It sounds like do good to the Creator, bring contentment to Him, things that kind of don't match the status of talking about a higher, upper, eternal, complete upper force that has no self-calculation. That's why we have to try to translate all those things to our framework. This is how Kabbalists described it, because there's generally a big problem with the wisdom of Kabbalah and its expressions, with things like a nation of Israel and nations of the world and holy nation, and today we have to disseminate the wisdom of Kabbalah to the whole world. How can we cope with all those expressions? It's really terrible. Sounds like nationality and pride and what kind of thing it is. Sounds like it's disrespect towards everyone else and so on. This is how it sounds. Until a person begins to open, to reveal the real picture, there he sees this inner division of the soul that is the only thing that is discussed. And that we are in an imaginary world. Besides the soul, there's nothing. And that soul is seemingly divided into thousands or billions of pieces, as if those pieces that are imagining that they're divided, they have to become reunited, getting a feeling and understanding of where they are. The state of eternity and wholeness that they are in. So, before that picture is revealed to the soul, it's not a person anymore. It's a soul. It turns into this world is like a sort of an imagination that he has to be in because he's still connected to it. But before revealing that picture, it's impossible to justify the Kabbalists that describe our relation with the Creator and our obligations and so on. I remember myself and how hard it was. It's always like you're apologetic when you're explaining, because this is how they expressed those relationships. It sounds like they're talking about a master and a slave, a king, something we have to give our whole life away, and being slaves and so on. It sounds very, very... And it's not like you can say that thousands of years ago they couldn't find other examples or other words. It's irrelevant to time. Because if you will come to their state at the 21st century, you will write these things and talk about these things using the same words. The king's treasure, the fear of the king, and so on and so forth. You'll find the same words somehow, that this is how you express it. And you won't be able to change words. You'll start to understand the numerical value of the Hebrew letters as well, and how those are forces that are actually combinations of different qualities. You won't be able to escape it, because this is something that works from within matter itself, building the letters and words and sounds they make and so on, and all these expressions. So they didn't have a way to do it differently. So as we advance from our externality towards revealing that picture, we gradually get rid of our prejudice about the language, about the terms and concepts and this unpleasant portrayal. And then we find a more inner and inner interpretation and identify with it according to the correction of our vessels. Yes.
Kabbalists speak about degrees. In which degree in our work, in what degree do we turn into being independent? That the Creator gives us these attractions and then we become to be completely independent and give to our Creator.
All the 125 degrees is where this is happening to you. Gradually. It's like in our life. For instance, well, my kids are already grown-ups, but I have grandchildren. So you perhaps have to. So you see how they grow. You see how your children grew, how your grandchildren grow. Each and every year, they become more and more independent. At first, you don't need to to carry them. Then later they make their own food. Then they start working even. They become independent. They get married. They bring children. This is already called a man, that he has independence. I asked Rabash about it and he said this. Children are playing in the backyard. One of the kids goes home. They ask him, where do you go? He says, I'm going home to eat. I'm hungry, I'm going home. Comes home, opens up the fridge, you know, yells at his mother, mother, why don't I have this and that? I want this and that. You know, the child's regular behavior. They demand. It's true, a child has to demand because he feels that he belongs to his mother. He expresses not his independence, but his dependence. And after a few years in the backyard, the children are talking. Then they see their friend coming. What's up? How's it going? Where are you going? I'm going to my mother and father. They invited us, meaning him and his wife, to the dinner. You see, I'm not going home to eat. I got an invitation from my mother and father to go to dinner. This is called independence. He doesn't feel himself as the host, as the landlord on the other hand. On the other hand, he feels independent. So if you're asking about independence, there are two things here. How much you become independent, and how much you disconnect from your mother and father. Two different things. You understand? This is called remoteness. Where you always go further away, on the one hand. On the other hand, here you become similar, closer. Here you become further, and here you become closer. What can you do? That's it. Yes.
No.
There's questions from all around the world. What does it mean to request from the Creator? How is that expressed, that request?
The request can only be for one thing. the light that reforms, that force. I myself cannot change myself. We see the whole of humanity gradually becomes despaired, realizing that all their actions are just, they're getting confused from day to day. Even the systems that we built by ourselves, whether it's finance or anything else, anything that we try to govern and manage, we see that it's broken. So in our work, we must reach despair. And it's not so simple. As Baal HaSulam writes, there's no happier moment in a person's life than the one where he is despaired from his own strength, and then he sees that he has no choice but to cry to the Creator, and then he has a real cry, and the Creator answers. Because if there's no real cry, there's no real desire, no real deficit, so the light doesn't appear. It doesn't work. Everything is simple with the Creator. There's light here. Upper light. The giver. That's it. Nothing else. To the extent that you, from your state, here, there are 125 degrees between you and the light. If you enter the minimal, smallest degree, right, first degree, number one, if you start resembling him, meaning being in the desire towards him, then he influences you, meaning you entered the field of influence of the light. It works. If you made a bigger desire, say degree number 5, so it influences you more, because you became closer. It's the all of this is the spectrum of the light, the area of the light. This is how it works. We, in the meantime, are here. We're here. Meaning, there's no demand from us. Once there is a demand, that's the deficit, the desire, then the light works according to that desire. The light which created the desire, sustains the desire, it's called the light shakes the vessels, the light make the vessels. The desire itself can never do anything by itself. So you can ask, if the desire cannot do anything, then how can it reach a state where it does want the light? So what are we demanded to do? If the desire is just, you know, something that can't do anything, what can you do with it? It's like a piece of metal or just some dust. What can you do with it? No. No. This is incorrect, because in the desire, there is a spark that comes from the shattering of the vessels. And that spark from the shattering of the vessels awakens your desire, pulling it, drawing it towards the light. Although the desire itself pulls you to something else. So if there's no spark yet, meaning if it hasn't appeared, became revealed, then nothing is demanded of a person. So he evolves until the desire grows and the spark appears. But if the spark appeared already, stop. Now, the light can no longer work on a person from above. A person is given an opportunity. You're brought into a place where you can develop your spark until you desire the influence of the light. So that spark or desire is here. Perhaps I'll color it red. Like this. So that's our deficit above, and our ego stays below.
He gives here a quote about reward and punishment, that if the reward and punishment would be revealed, so people would work for their own benefit, because they would feel immediately the blows or the pleasure from the love of the Creator. Can you expand on this, on reward and punishment? Because if I don't understand, if the Creator doesn't have calculations, we're within the ego, so and we as if punish Him.
No. Reward and punishment is what we have by nature. You know, you see that something, some place is more pleasant to you, so other place is worse for you. So you always go for the pleasant place. You can't go to a place that is worse for you. If you make calculations, even if you suffer to an extent, still you somehow benefit from that place you go to, and that benefit seems higher for you. It could be something ethical or something social, but somehow you get a greater benefit, and that is why you make that choice. Otherwise, your nature doesn't let you do it. This is what we call regular, beastly, natural reward and punishment. It's the same with still vegetative and animate. If you look at how substances are connected in chemistry, or if you look at forces in physics of attraction and resistance, the electrons in the atom, anything. It's all working like that. So that's the regular calculation. This is where reward and punishment is clear. It's all working according to a natural formula. And there's another kind of reward and punishment which is different, where my reward or punishment is not about the fulfillment. It's not how much I receive in my regular vessels. It is how much I sympathize, identify with someone, meaning not inside of me, but someone outside of me, the Creator. And then my reward and punishment is truth or false, as opposed to bitter and sweet. Meaning we have bitter and sweet, and truth and false. So if I only make the calculation of what's more bitter or sweet, that's called a beastly calculation or clarification or a bodily scrutiny. Why? Because that's the highest degree of it. It also exists in the still and vegetative levels. On the animate level, it's the greatest degree of it. If I'm talking about truth and false, it's called a spiritual scrutiny. Why? Because it's above the body. That's all. So we're always struggling for bitter or sweet, truth and false. What do I prefer over what? Could be sweet and false, or bitter and truth, or if it's truth, then I won't care about the bitterness, and vice versa, and so on. And who helps me make the scrutiny? The light. The light from above. When that surrounding light shines on me, it raises the importance of this scrutiny, of this calculation. This spiritual calculation, let's say, raises the importance of the spiritual calculation above the corporeal one. This is the light that appears like a magnet from above and raises me to a higher level of calculation. I myself can't do it. If you think you can do it on your own, you're simply lying to yourself, and you're staying in a beastly calculation. You just think that you're clarifying truth and false. The truth is that this ascent to truth and false beyond bitter and sweet is really the makhsum, the barrier. Meaning when you receive such an influence of the light that it sustains you above your ego, holds you above your ego. That's called above the makhsum, above the barrier. That's all. These things are quite simple. My point in the heart now becomes more important, and it shines to me, and all the ego below, I don't take it into account. Of course, I have it. I am with it. I feel it. But my whole sense of it is in order to always advance in appreciating the spiritual calculation more. Meaning, I measure how much I rose above the ego by the ego. Let's say I have 10 kilos of egoistic desire, and I rose above it. So I know my force of rejection. It's 10 kilos. Because in the light itself, I don't have any orientation. I don't find myself. I can't measure there. All my vessels in spirituality come from the ego, from the left, from my intention to receive.
Alejandro from El Ecuador and Didi from Afula, who is also in Kfar Saba and Zichron Yaakov, are asking about the cry. What do we do in order to come to that inner cry, and if there is advancement without a cry?
There's no advancement without a cry, for sure, and you can reach that cry only by the society, only by the environment. A person himself cannot do it, because that cry must be aimed at bestowal. I need to rise above my ego. So, all my ascent must be towards connection. Because where do I leap out of my ego? Where to? It's just like trying to pull myself out of a hole by my hairs. It's a prisoner cannot free himself from the prison. When I engage in connection with the others, it means that I take my point in the heart out of my ego by connecting it to others. Through these efforts, through this labor, I increase my efforts more and more, and I always get inspired by this, the environment that inspires me more and more, and through that environment I receive the light that reforms. Only through the environment. This is something we learn from this system called Arichanpin, Abaveima, Zaranpin, and Malchut, where Malchut is called Shechina, which is the sum total of the souls. And all the souls are below the Parsa. That's where they are broken souls. So, we have no way of receiving the light that reforms from Ein Sof. In that way, through Malchut to, but only to the collective, the sum total of the souls. So we raise ourselves to Shekhinah, to Shekhinta. It's called Malchut, or gathering of Israel, which means gathering all those aiming for connection, bestowal. And there only we find the influence of the light from above. That's the meeting point. If you connect, I would put it like this. This Shekhinah exists. Only it's broken towards each and every one. What does it mean that it's broken? You complete it. To the extent you complete it, all the others are at the end of correction. To the extent you connect with others, you find the light that reforms to yourself. He writes that as well.
They're asking about actions in the group in Beit Kabbalah Am Jerusalem. Is the cry itself a group action?
It's an accumulation of the general efforts of the group, because there must be influence over a person from outside, and then he is able to cry personally. It goes together, meaning the external influence of the surrounding, the environment, and one's individual cry. But he feels that he cries from within the collective, from everyone, because his cry as well, this is something Rabash describes in a few articles. What is he crying for? For connecting with others, what is it? What's it for? Save me from my own life. His cry is, I want to reach bestowal. I respect bestowal. So it is personal, but it is for connection with others, for completing himself towards the others, and from them towards the Creator. There has to be Israel, the light, and the Creator. Well, what is spirituality? It's bestowal. It's an area or forces or qualities that are only above the ego. Within the ego, you can only feel this world and this life, never more than that.
They're asking still about the group. How can I help myself or the group in order to come to that state of fear?
By mutual work. The work of Arvut. What's the Arvut for? Mutual guarantee. We each want to awaken each other to a desire for vessels of bestowal, to the confidence that the upper light will perform that action upon us, will give us masach en ochozel, will make a restriction over our vessels of reception, once we truly desire it.
Again, they're asking from Washington, D.C. Does the light come from unity? Is the light that comes from unity and the light that comes from fear the same light?
No, fear is a degree above the first connection. The fear is really above the machsom, the barrier. Before the barrier, there's no fear. We want to reach it. We want to desire to bestow. And being afraid to not be in it is called longing for or getting closer to fear. Fear truly is above the barrier, where I have a constant struggle of how much more can I bestow. There, I am realizing my vessels. Here is below the machsom. It's not fear yet, but I want to bestow. What's the time of preparation? I want to reach bestowal. And here, above it, I'm already in bestowal.
Our friends from Zichron Yaakov are asking, is the whole role of the group in order to awaken this cry?
Our whole purpose is to awaken the cry so that we finally receive the light that reforms. There's no other goal for us. Because the light solves everything for us. It brings us power and mind. It opens our eyes, all our senses. We realize where we are. We understand how we're all structured, how we are operated. The light does it all. It opens your life. It opens your kli. Before it, you're in a darkened kli, unconscious, feeling terrible. Suddenly the light appears, and everywhere you feel that you are alive. So there's nothing else to yearn for, only the light that will come and change us. That's the work. That's why the work is called the Creator's work, or the work of the light. But we invite it. It can happen by our desire that comes first, by our man. This is why there's an allegory about eating the man in the desert, meaning that all the 40 years, which means from Malchut to Bina, that's the degree of 40, we are simply raising man, the desire, the deficit. And then we acquire the light of faith, as it's called, the light of Bina, Chafetz Chesed.
Steve from Nebetzedek is asking, on the spiritual path, we need to go on the path of truth. How does the group check that we're going on the path of truth? What are the criteria for that?
The criteria is, how much do I raise myself above my ego by connecting with the group? How much I'm concerned about it, want to be in it, thinking about it? Everything is towards connection with the others. In the connection, I find the right kli and the light. And let's move on to the next part.
Before going to the next part, we'll sing a song together.
במקום לקפל רוצה להשביע תיקון אמיתי יגיע אלינו בתנאי שאני אחיה עבורנו אז תן לנו כוח לצאת ממצרים בלב ובמוח לפנות לשמיים לפנות השפעה לפקוח עיניים לחיות בחברה כמו טיפה בקוס מים אז תן לנו כוח לצאת ממצרים בלב ובמוח השמיים לבנות השפעה לפקוח עיניים להיות בחברה כמו טיפה וגוזריים היחס שלך הוא טוב ומטיב ורק בזכותך נוכל להשיג תמונת הבינה אלינו תשיב איזה השפעה כמוך נגיב אז תן לנו כוח לצאת ממצרים בלב ובמוח לבנות לשמיים Shamayim, not a shpalit, koach enayim, yom bachemal, kotipa, vetosayim.